We're still here. We hope you are too. Welcome back to the bitter end for this lockdown, pandemic, potentially post-apocalyptic or pre-apocalyptic miniature season of The Bitter End with me, Todd Jordan.
And me, Tom Denny. Hey, Todd. How you doing?
I'm all right, man. What a crazy time to be alive. Are you aware that these times are unprecedented?
I mean, I've heard it mentioned a few times. And these unprecedented times are just... Damn, we needed to do a season.
We gotta do a season.
For our own sanity, if nothing else.
I'm missing you, buddy. I'm missing you.
Yeah, me too, man. Like, I was like, man, I just didn't feel it was going to be anytime soon that we're going to sit together on the same sofa and watch a movie. So this is going to be the next best thing. We're back for a mini season.
How many movies, Tom?
We are watching three movies in the Beastmaster franchise.
Are you sure it's not Beansmaster? I'm pretty sure it's called Beansmaster.
It's just, well, it's like a barbarian imbued with the power of beans.
Yeah, I think you've misread that.
Yeah, okay. He's got them all. Kidney, runner, broad.
Pinto.
Oh, that's a good one. We had to come back, you know, partly for our own sanity and just, I haven't actually watched a movie since the lockdown and pandemic stuff began, weirdly finding myself with even less time now than I ever had, and I don't leave the house.
Perhaps a bit of a symptom of fatherhood as much as anything else, though?
Yes, it is. and so, you know, we were talking about, like, okay, Todd, what should we do? Let's just watch something short and sweet and that we can have some fun with. And I don't know how Beastmaster came up, but it seemed like the only choice once it came up.
Well, here's why I love this. I've never seen any of these, but the original one is the brainchild and directed by a certain Mr. Don Coscarelli, Mr. Phantasm himself, our last official season of the podcast. So we're keeping that thread going and watching how this most indie of all filmmakers dips his toe into the big budget Hollywood pool. But also, because we've never really done a fantasy franchise before.
No, I mean, this has got, you know, some serious sword swinging, which obviously, like, Highlander had, but that was, like, present day, and it was sci-fi, and all kinds of weird stuff. But this is proper, like, swords and sandals, Dungeons and Dragons.
Oily nips.
Yeah, just, like, loincloths, like, real Conan territory, which I'm up for, and I'm especially up for now that we have watched the trailer for this bad boy.
Holy shit, I think this is the best trailer I've ever seen.
It was just a lot of stuff, and it was all cool, and it was all gnarly as shit.
It had ferrets in it, a couple of ferrets.
Yeah, like...
It had child sacrifice.
Swords, you know, it had, like, the Beastmaster doing that Conan standing on top of, like, a mountain, swinging the sword from side to side kind of thing. Apparently, the Beastmaster, he has the strength of a tiger, the courage of an eagle, makes him more than any man, more than any lover. And I was, and then after they said any lover, you see him, like, kissing this loinclothed lady, and then two ferrets poke out of a you know, like a bag. And I was like, okay, I'm really looking forward to that love scene for some reason. I want to see how, you know, what the ferrets think, what their hot take is.
Hey man, lockdown's hitting everybody hard.
Yeah. Got to get your kicks where you find them.
I mentioned this during the Phantasm season, but I've read Don Coscarelli's book where he sort of charts his career. And because I've never seen Beastmaster, when it was the chapters about him making Beastmaster, a lot of it didn't really massively sink in with me. The only bit I can really remember is him talking about how freaked out he was during the scene where he gets the ferret to kiss the tiger.
Oh, well, I'm looking forward to that shit. Yeah, there's like some proper, like, you know, like... there's a tiger that seems to be a character in this for a lot of the film. And it's going to be quite weird watching that. Because obviously, like, nowadays you don't necessarily have, like, trained animal actors in films. You just CGI that shit. But this dude just seems to be rocking about with a tiger the whole time.
Yeah, doggy. Jizz whale, my tiger.
This film actually, so this is The Beastmaster, as Todd said, directed by Don Coscarelli, came out in 1982. This is, he co-wrote it, and this is like the film he made after Phantasm.
That's amazing.
Like, this, and this is the follow-up.
It's a big jump up in scale from the looks of it. And also what I really like is from the trailer, you can really tell it's Don Coscarelli. There are some shots in it that almost look like they could be from Phantasm.
Yeah, it looks like, it looks very like a Conan-y kind of swords and sandals film, but it looks freaky as shit. There's like some dudes in, you know, like big masks and big like studded gloves that look like, The Humongous from Mad Max 2.
All right. Well, we are going to watch this movie in a bit. We're going to write this terrible wrong that we haven't seen this, because I know that in, at least in America, this first film is kind of considered to be one of those ones that's just always on TV.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just like potentially being rerun over and over and over again, and is kind of the butt of some jokes as a result of that. So I think a lot of our American listeners might be like, what, you've never seen Beastmaster? That's like Raiders of the Lost Ark for us over here, which is just always on TV.
It's never really come across my radar that, you know, like I've heard the name, but I just, you know, it never really popped up. But I mean, a bit of like other like, you know, basic factual info, I think, for this and the franchise going in. So it's based off of, or loosely based off of a book by Andrew Norton, written in 1959, but I think it might be super loosely adapted. We'll look into that later. There are two more films in the franchise. There's Beastmaster 2, Through the Portal of Time, where Beastmaster goes to modern-day LA. Which just, that is really the reason why we're doing this franchise, because that just sounded like literally the best
thing. all the better, because at the time, modern day LA is what, that's got to be 80s LA, right?
Late 80s, early 90s or something like that, which sounds so dope. And then Beastmaster 3, The Eye of Braxis, which I think was straight to video, but I think has your boy who played Candyman in it as the baddie.
Tony Todd?
I think so.
Whoa!
So that's going to be pretty cool. And then I think after that, there was a Beastmaster TV series, which I'm sure we'll probably, you know, do a, you know, dip our toes into the Wikipedia page of at least.
yes, for sure.
So Todd, before we get stuck in, you've watched the best trailer ever made.
Oh, dog, let me testify about how good this trailer was.
Now, I want you to put your money where your mouth is and tell me what you feel the good and bad users of IMDb have rated this as we play the IMDb guessing game. Yes.
Such a sweet game. Okay, so remind me of the year.
1982.
Okay. I'm going to say 69, dude. It looks sexy. That's what I'm feeling.
That is very, very sexy. You're in the right ballpark. It's a 6.2, which is still, you know, that's pretty respectable. I think a 6.9 would have been a higher IMDb rating than Phantasm, and I just can't imagine people like loving this over Phantasm. But then,
true.
I don't know.
From the trailer, I feel like more people would have seen this than Phantasm.
That's very true, very true. But then Phantasm has a very dedicated fan base.
And almost no ferrets at all.
Yes, so it's going to be interesting to see whether, you know, did the ferrets mark it down? Did the ferrets make the film? We're going to have to see.
All right, Aruni, shall we go check out The Beastmaster?
Caw-caw!
It was foretold by witches. It was conceived through sorcery. And it was to be destroyed by all that is evil. But the courage of one mortal saved it. And so, into an age of darkness, in a time of mysticism, sacrifice, and plunder, there came the only light. The Beastmaster. Born with the strength of a black tiger, the courage of an eagle, the power that made him more than any hero. More than any lover, he was lord and master over all beasts. Ah! He was the Beast Master.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
I most definitely enjoyed it. It was absolutely not the movie I was expecting, Thomas.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, we're going to recount the film here through the murky sands of time, as it is now some days have passed since Todd and I have both watched The Beastmaster.
The Master of the Beasts.
But I did enjoy quite a lot of this mad, mad ride.
I very much enjoyed it, absolutely. As Tom has alluded to, it's been a few days since we watched it, and we're also recording this separately because of the global pandemic, so it's a slightly different experience for us. The main thing that this movie made me feel is it brought all of these memories flooding back to me of being a tiny little infant boy. And every once in a while, every few years, I would go through a phase of deciding that I was going to get into fantasy and being I love swords and dragons and shit like that. And then I would like pick up a book or watch a film or something and be like, this isn't like, there's so much of this that isn't what I think fantasy is. There's like all of this other extraneous stuff that's not what I'm interested in at all. And over time, I worked out that what I was interested in was skulls, cups full of blood, you know, monsters, stuff like that. That's fine. But like when it first started, I was like, oh yeah, I should watch so much more fantasy. I love fantasy. And then so much of it was like this lady like rolling around in a tunic and people playing flutes. And I was like, why are you putting all of this into the movie for? I don't need any of this. Just go back to the people with skulls on their faces.
Yeah. Just, you know, like cut out a load. You know, it's like a 2-hour film, which is quite long for a film which is essentially a silent film for like the majority of it. There's like, so much of it. There's so little dialogue. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I think like, in a way, like bits of the film that suffer most are the bits with dialogue, because the dialogue feels very like clunky and perfunctory, and the people delivering dialogue can't really deliver dialogue. So yeah, like most of this plays out without dialogue, and if anything, they should have taken out more of it. But I know,
I wholeheartedly agree.
But I know what you mean, like, but you know, the silent bits where it's just like fights with gnarly dudes and animals and stuff. Yeah, that's kind of what you want fantasy to be. You want fantasy films to be like, was it a Frank Frazetta painting of like,
yes,
that's what you want it to be. You want it to be like, yeah, like the box artwork for Golden Axe or something like that. It's just like, I just want loincloths and swords and fighting monsters. Anything else, you know, any kind of character development? No. I mean, there is no character development in this film anyway. But anyway, you just want it to be all kind of all action all the time, all gnarly cosplay loincloths and masks and swords and axes in the face.
Absolutely. Tom, you mentioned Frank Frazetta there.
Yeah.
And I think if any of our listeners aren't familiar with the work of Frank Frazetta, it's well worth a quick search for. This is exactly as Tom's described, because it's just all of these like ridiculously, obviously very old-fashioned now. There's some stuff in it that wouldn't fly nowadays. But
yes,
at the time, as a little boy with very little knowledge of the problems of the world, I was like, yeah, this is gnarly, all these muscly blokes like stabbing things. So recently I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. I remember all of that stuff. So I looked him up on Instagram, and he's not alive anymore, but someone was maintaining an official Frank Frazetta account, like posting pictures of his work. So occasionally they'd come across my Instagram feed, these really gnarly fantasy pictures. And I was like, yes, good. This is all that I needed. And then one day there was a post saying, hi, I'm actually Frank Frazetta's grandson. And I'm now going to, we've just hit 10,000 followers on this account. Such a big dream of mine. And my granddad would have loved it. So in honor, I'm now turning the account into the official account for my vape brand. And then it was just all of his vape products from then on out.
Oh no, I was going to be like, oh man, I've really got to follow this on Instagram. Yeah, I'd love
not
the sound
anymore.
Of that. Oh no, okay.
The official Frank Frazetta account is now like Frazetta brand vape.
Oh, boo.
Boo to that. Anyway, we should probably talk about The Beastmaster.
Let's talk about The Beastmaster. It opens, you know, it's
presented by the Leisure Investment Company.
Definitely a front, right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a front. Yeah.
Leisure Investment Company. What the fuck are you talking about?
Money's being funneled somewhere. And it's the most unimpressive opening to a film because it's all these just like shit stills of animals. And it feels incredibly budget. And then we get a really bad logo. But then we get this like super cool sandstorm Aztec temple. And you go into the temple, there's like burning torches everywhere, and there's these like saucy witches with their butts out around a cauldron doing some spooky ooky magic.
But they do have like Skeletor face.
They
even
do.
Though they got their butts out, they've got like the front of a skull like plastered to their face.
But that's like such a like a good reveal where it's kind of like, okay, this is instantly sort of like scantily clad Frazetta style fantasy ladies, and then the camera turns and they've all got gnarly like acid faces, and it's like kind of like, yeah, cool, that's gnarly. And they're there with the bad guy of this piece, Rip Torn.
Now, if you're not familiar with Rip Torn, you're probably, I guess his most commonly known role nowadays is as Zed from the Men in Black movies, which is super confusing to me because there's another character in this movie called Zed. And it's not Rip Torn.
Yeah. I, for most of my notes, was just calling him Rip Torn because I just completely missed what his name was. And then everyone, I was like, okay, his name is Mayax. And then the credits rolled and Mayax was spelt M-A-A-X. No gap, no hyphen. So it's like, no, so his name is just Max.
Yeah, it's not Mayax, but the guy like fell asleep on the keyboard.
Yeah, exactly. And so Rip Torn is there. He's like a baddie kind of wizard. He has, for some reason, this weird prosthetic on his nose to just make it bigger, but it just, I don't know why they did it. He just has this little extra bit of nose. He's got his sexy witches with gnarly faces. He's got these kind of acolytes in big robes. So they're spying on a young lady who is with child. And then suddenly, the king bursts in. He's like, hi.
It's because the witches have prophesied that Rip Torn will die at the hands of King Zed's unborn son. And he goes, puh, huh, dream on. I'm going to have a bloody sacrifice, aren't I? Deal with that.
Yeah, and then the king shows up and is like, ha-ha. The thing about...
The king is like, you're not going to sacrifice my son. I won't let you. It's the classic, like, church versus throne power struggle.
Yes, right? Exactly. I think the weird thing is, like, the film throws you in without any kind of setup or anything like that. I feel like I've only seen, like, the Conan films, like, once each. But I feel they at least start with a little kind of, you know, like, in another world, another time. Something to set the scene. Like, you know, we just got, there's a temple. There's this wizard, I assume. He has saucy butt witch faces. And then like, they're looking at some lady and now, oh, there's a, I'm guessing this guy is the king. Why is he keeping this guy around? He's obviously evil. The two of them don't seem to like each other. This is their first interaction. Why? What? He's like, you're a mad zealot. It's like, well, why are you funding him, dude? And then, like, he's like, you're banished. You can't kill my child. Then Mayax is like, well, if you think I'm a mad zealot, check this out. And then his henchmen hang themselves ritualistically for no reason. And then he's like,
this is amazing. They hang themselves with these grappling hook belts. So he's just like, oh, I want to prove how much the people are devoted to me, not you. And so his monks like take off their belts with these grappling hooks on the end. They sling the grappling hooks into the ceiling and then immediately hang themselves then and there. It's pretty cool.
It's cool. It's very Don Coscarelli. It's very phantasm-y.
Yeah, totally.
And then, yeah, then, like, he fucks off. Mayax has gone off, and then we just get, like, holy shit, like, the next scene of, like, what happens with King Zed and his sleeping wife and the unborn child is that one of the sneaky witches sneaks into what looks like their tent. There is no security, but she just sneaks in. It's like, okay, she's sneaking in. And then she's being followed by a cow, a giant fucking cow that she sneaks into the bedroom while everyone is still asleep. And then she pours some sort of like magic goo and does some kind of oogie boogie stuff that basically takes the baby out of the king's wife and transports the baby into the cow. And I was like, I'm in. This is fucking weird. I'm in.
I guess this is going to be, this ends up being the source of the Beastmaster's power, that he's born from a cow. He's a man born from a cow.
I guess. Maybe.
I guess. There's no point later where he never talks to a cow and is like, mummy.
No one ever explains like why he has this power or anything. It's just he's just,
I think
he
it's
just
the
is.
Cow thing. So then the witch, who really reminds me, by the way, of the Bene Gesserit witches from Dune, which we know for a fact Don Coscarelli is a big fan of because of all the Dune references in Phantasm. And around this time, he was heavily lobbying to be able to direct the Dune film,
right?
Which later on went to David Lynch. But so I guess this was his like showreel for that.
Yeah.
But the Bene Gesserit witch takes the cow out, kills the cow, cuts the baby from the belly. I guess they like couldn't have gotten away with killing the queen and cutting the baby from her belly, I guess.
Had to do that magic. They had a cow, they had to use it.
And then they can't just kill the baby. There's some sort of ritual where they have to kill it in a very specific way.
They brand but it. They brand it
and they say some special word. But then as she's doing it, this peasant comes along, this peasant who's got a really gnarly throwing axe.
Yeah.
He fucks shit up and he saves the baby by throwing the witch on the fire. And for some reason, at this point in my notes, I've written sexy bikini witch. I guess the witch is in a bikini. Does that ring a bell? Did that happen? Did I imagine it?
So many people in this film are in bikinis. So why not? There's so much side butt in this film. Not so much side boob, but so much side butt. From everyone. It's a wild ride. So this guy picks up the baby and is like, I'm going to look after this baby as my own. He goes back to inexplicable stilt village, where it's just like this village where all the houses are on stilts for no apparent reason other than they're obviously going to fall over later like in a battle. He raises the boy, who is called, what is the Beastmaster? I just keep on calling him Beastmaster.
The actor's name is Mark Singer, and the Beastmaster's name is...
My God.
I don't think I ever had the inclination to try and log that in my notes.
I think a lot of this, like, there's so little kind of dialogue and half of it is kind of unintelligible and mumbled that I really got so far through this film without knowing his name. Dar. His name is Dar.
Dar. Yeah, that doesn't...
Duh. Yeah, it's not a great name. And he raises Dar, and now Dar is a young boy, and we see this scene where Dar has this kind of power over animals where some other lad from the village gets mauled to shit by a bear, and then Dar just like walks up to the bear and like high fives him and is like, yeah, that's funny. Off you go, mate. Then Dar grows up again into like this kind of oddly haired 30-year-old man who just walks around in a loincloth. He's got a dog. He's just working on the land. Inexplicable stilt village is cool. Everyone's having fun. Dar's doing some, like, they're farming the dirt. All the peasants go out and farm the dirt. The dog starts barking, and then Dar goes and checks it out, and there's a cloud coming their way, and it's like it's the cloud of the baddies. All got to run.
Who are called the Juns? I wrote down Junt, but then when I looked at the credits, I think it doesn't have the T at the end. It's J-U-N.
Didn't write it down. Didn't write it down. It was the name of a character in this. Don't need to. Bad army were coming. And so, like, the village prepares for battle. And then, like, this super gnarly kind of barbarian raider army show up, and like the main guy is the guy we saw in like the trailer who looks a bit like the Humongous from Mad Max 2, but has these giant like bat ears on the side of his like all black kind of like face mask, which makes him look, I think there's like this like old D&D character called Warduke who was in like the D&D cartoons and stuff like that, and like this film is basically like someone played a D&D campaign and then turned it into a film. It's like D&D, Frank Frazetta, there you go. Here's a film, bit of Conan. There you have it. And this is all cool. And everyone in the village gets fucking murdered.
Yeah. So Dar's dad gets trampled by some horses. There's lots of fighting. The dog sacrifices itself to save Dar, gets stabbed. We get this sort of floppy dog action. At this point in my notes, I wrote down, no beans yet.
Okay.
And then basically, Dar gets his pecs out and vows revenge. Revenge against the Juns for killing his whole village. The reason they've done this is they're trying to find Dar because he is the son of Zed, the king, the one who is prophesied to kill Rip Torn one day.
Because Rip Torn shows up with the army of the Jun, and he's gone mad now, like more mad. Like he's got like really weird, like plaited hair, and his teeth, he stopped brushing his teeth. His teeth have gone all rotten and yucky.
I'm no Bible scholar, but isn't this basically the story of King Herod?
Yeah,
isn't this
of that.
Kind of what happened? They're like, oh, one day there's got to be this baby that's got to take charge. And so he's like, right, well, I'm going to go around and I'm going to kill all the babies then.
Yeah,
and then that's
yeah.
why they get rid of the Jesus goes away for a bit and then comes back after a montage. And he's like, right, I'm back now. And then at that point, my Bible knowledge runs out. I have no idea whether or not Jesus and King Herod have like a big fight, a big sword fight maybe on a mountaintop.
Yeah, they have that
he's
fight.
Like,
on
you
top
killed
of-
my mother.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that. That's pretty much how the Bible goes. Yeah, it's like that kind of thing. Rip Torn's on this massive child-murdering jag. And then, yeah, so Dar's like, okay, I'll, you know, off I go into the wilderness. He has, like, there's some dead dad exposition, where his dad is, like, telling him in his mind, you know, go seek revenge, yada, yada, yada. You know the deal. So, yeah, like, Dar puts on, like, the really skimpy loincloth, this gold tiara. He gets his dad's sword. He's got a mate who's a hawk. Like, during this battle, there's this hawk that's flying around, and, like, Dar can see through the eyes of the hawk. And so off they go, and Dar goes and does a Highlander-style sword fighting training, which means going to the top of a mountain and swinging a sword around against no opponents, and that's all you need to become really good at sword fighting.
Well, it worked for Highlander.
Exactly.
And I'm glad you mentioned it, Tom, because did you realise that Mark Singer, the actor who played Dar, was in Highlander, the TV show?
Oh, was he?
Yes, he was in, not in any of the films, sadly, but he was in Highlander, the TV show. So there's another little link. This franchise ties to Phantasm and now to our second series ever.
I like that. And it's also kind of like, you know, it's like, well, they did do a Beastmaster TV series as well. But he's kind of like, well, I'm not going to go and do the Beastmaster TV series. So I'll hop over to Highlander and then somebody else will hop on to like whoever plays the Beastmaster, the TV series. You have to look at what he did. What's his film franchise? And then we get this kind of sequence of like Dar exploring the wilderness and basically picking up animal companions.
We need to talk about these fucking ferrets.
Yeah, so he's got the hawks, and then he's got the hawk, and then he picks up some like cheeky ferrets. So a lot of this film is played very seriously, and the comic relief are these two cheeky ferrets.
They end up having quite an arc, though, these ferrets. The reason he meets them is because they like steal his food or something, and he's chasing them, and he ends up in quicksand. But then he works out he can like touch their minds and get them to do something. So what they crawl to the end of this weak branch and bend it down so that he can grab hold of it. But then one of the ferrets falls in the quicksand as well. And then there's a genuine moment where it looks like he's going to let the ferret drown. But then he reaches in and he pulls it out and he's like, ah, I have my eyes that in the hawk. You two can be my cunning. And for some inexplicable reason, he names them Koto and Poto. Those are not good names, bro.
Was one of those names like the name of his dog?
His dog was called something else like it, like Doto or something.
The naming game in like Beastmaster Land is pretty fucking whack. It's really bad. So now he's got his cunning comedy ferrets. He's got a hawk. And then we go to some big cat rescue where like he comes across some bad lads who have captured like, I guess it's like a panther. It's like a panther.
Well, okay, so I looked into this. It's actually a tiger dyed black.
Because it didn't look like the panthers are smaller. I was like, this is...
I wrote down panther everywhere in my notes. I did a bit of reading. Apparently, it's meant to be a black tiger, which obviously doesn't exist in nature as far as I'm aware. Mm. It's a crazy fantasy black tiger. But apparently there's some bits where, like, around its muzzle, you can see the dye, like, wiping away in certain scenes.
That is so unnecessary. Like, who was the person who had to dye this fucking tiger? Like,
yeah.
What,
because
what a job.
My understanding of tigers is that you don't really want to piss them off.
No, you don't. So Dar goes and fights these guys who are trying to capture the panther tiger. I think the ferrets maybe help. There's some, you know, he throws his gnarly throwing axe, all this kind of stuff, and then he releases the tiger, and the tiger is now down with Dar. Hashtag down with Dar, and
down with Dar sickness.
There's this bit where the tiger just goes and jumps on and mauls and eats one of the people who had captured him. And then you cut to Dar, who's just got this really satisfied look on his face. He's just like, this is good. And in the background, you just hear this person going like, no, 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 no. It's like, that's brutal, mate.
Yeah, not quite as brutal as what happens next, when we get, I guess, some played for laughs, Dar's attempt at seduction.
Oh, yeah.
So he,
there's no comedy.
This whole scene is absolutely fucked.
It's really fucked up. So there's no comedy in this, apart from the ferrets and any time Dar wants to bone down. But, I mean, it's they're trying to play it for laughs, but it's very upsetting.
Yeah, there was none of this shit in Phantasm. So Dar comes across some topless ladies swimming around the base of a waterfall. And so what does he do? Well, first of all, he pops the honkinest great big loincloth tent in his pants that you've ever seen in your life. And then he gets his ferret to steal the women's clothes so that they have to come ashore completely naked. And then he, like, forcibly pins one of the girls up against the tree and, like, kisses her against her will.
Before he pins her and, like, tries to kiss her, he gets his tiger to, like, pop up and be in on it. Like, the tiger is his wingman, and the tiger looks like it's going to eat the woman. And then Dar pops up and is like, wait, don't move. If we act like we're not afraid, maybe it will go. So he, like, pretends to save her from the tiger. And then he says the line, you owe me your life, but I will accept this in payment. Roar! He goes to suck her fucking face off. And then, like, while he's trying to, like, force himself on her, he turns round. The tiger is there looking at them, and then Dar winks at the tiger while he's trying to, like, you know, like,
what's the tiger getting out of this?
I don't know. The tiger's
it
like,
just likes to watch.
Yeah, the tiger's like, that worked beautifully. It's pretty fun. Yeah, her name is Kiri, and yeah, she didn't like it. She essentially just punches him in the balls. And she's like a temple slave for Riptorn. So he's like, come with me. I'm really not as predatory as I first might have come across. Sorry about that. She's like, no, I'm going to go back to, like,
I'd rather go be a slave, to be honest.
to like a fucking murderer and a maniac than be with you, you loinclothed predator. So there we go. That's the love interest of the film, ladies and gents.
Then we get my favourite sequence in the whole film. So Dar is just sort of bimbling along, and he finds this sort of desolate little nook where there's a dude being kept in a cage. And he's like, all right, then, well, I will release you, dude, from a cage. There's some severed head soup on the boil.
Yeah, it's like a big spooky tree. Like, and this is like, all these scenes in this film are basically unconnected. You know, like, it's a series of vignettes. And this is a bit where, like, Dar approaches spooky tree with these, like, glowing orbs on it. And there's a big cauldron of, like, severed head soup. He lets go of a man. Because there is hardly any dialogue in this film, the man says nothing. But, yeah, then what happens next is pretty special.
So the man that he frees tries to leg it and is then caught up by this sort of hideous figure who's kind of got like a bit of a beak face, but it's like a soft fleshy beak, and this figure envelops the escaped man in a skin cloak. He's got like big wings that are just made of skin, and there's like this kind of mucus inside that dissolves the man completely. It's got a corrosive skin cloak. Oh my god!
And then there's loads of them. These things all kind of look a bit like a gnarly Doctor Who villain. They've got that kind of weird, like, faceless face.
I loved them so much. I looked up what they're called, because they never refer to it in the film. They're called the Winged Devourers.
I mean, that's super cool. And then, like, Dara's kind of like, huh, okay.
again, no one says anything. It's not like, you know, and then he's like, I'm just going to try and get out of here. And then his hawk flies in and lands on a statue of a bird. And then all of like the winged devourers go, you know what, buddy? You're all right.
And you're bird people, that's all right with us.
And then Darkon just leaves, and one of the winged devourers gives him like an amulet with a bird on it. And they're like, yeah, we're into birds. bye.
That's kind of a thing.
Yeah, and you're kind of like, huh. I mean, I guess this will have some reason, make some sense later on in the film. It's just like there's such a weird, out of the blue, like there's no setup for it. We don't talk about it again for a very long, you know, like, because all Dara's doing is walking around with animals. It's not like there's anywhere for him to riff off of.
Yeah, I was surprised to find that, like, the animal shtick is the least interesting part of this movie, to be honest.
Yeah. I don't know why I thought the Beastmaster was like, he's going to be able to turn into animals. So it's going to be like some kind of, like, lady... Was it Lady Hawk or Sparrow Hawk, whatever that film was where... But no, he is just literally the master of... He's just mates. He's Dr. Doolittle with a loincloth and a sword.
So then he travels on. He's like, oh, God, there was that sexy dame who apparently is a slave of this particular place. So I'm going to go down there and give them what for so that I can get my end away. So he finds where she said she was being kept a slave. And it's the same pyramid from the opening of the movie. Oh, my God.
Yeah, and Rip Torn has taken over.
Rip Torn's taken over the whole place. King Zed has disappeared. The road leading up to this pyramid is completely lined with bodies on spikes. And this is getting into some more like real phantasm shit. And
yes.
It's all right. And he cruises into town and it looks like there's another child sacrifice on the cards. Holy shit.
Yeah, like Rip Torn gets a child, throws it in a fire. That child is dead. And it's like, well, this is quite gnarly. And then Rip Torn goes, there is another. And there's like...
You liked that, did you? Have some more. Toss another baby on the Barbie.
He like spots that like there is a family. There's like, you know, a mum and a dad who brought their little girl. Don't take your child to the ritual sacrifice. She's young, I know, but she'd probably be safer if you left her at home. Right? Don't take her there. And so like Rip Torn's
it's
like...
It's a nice family day out,
yeah,
Tom.
Yeah, Rip Torn's like, right, okay, we're going to chuck this one in the fire. And then everyone bows down. Or no, there's this whole bit where like Rip Torn's like, I'm going to throw this baby in the fire. And then Dar has snuck in with a cloak on and he gets his eagle, to pick up the little girl and fly off with her. So you get this cool shot of like this eagle flying, carrying... what is essentially an empty sack made to look like a child, which is quite fun. Rip Torn sees Dar, and like Dar just looks really kind of confused. He's like, "Ha! I didn't expect that to happen." There's a moment where he just pauses and he goes, "See, what did I? You know, like, see, the gods aren't happy. I meant for that to happen." He styles it out, and then
the bird gives Dar the girl, and he's like, "Oh, I only really look after animals. I'm not really that interested in people unless I can bone them. So I guess I'm going to take you back to your dad." He brings the little girl back to her dad, and then they have a bit of a exposition party. So the dad explains that exactly as Tom said, Rip Torn has overthrown the throne. He's seized control with the sort of the church and the cult that's all about him. King Zed is being kept prisoner somewhere. And then there's a really good bit where we cut back to Rip Torn and he says the words, "Bring him to me, this master of the beasts." And I just really like it whenever any film works the title of the film into the film.
Yes, it's very, very deftly done. The Beastmaster escapes the city. Even though he's going to have to go back there anyway, there's a lot of kind of like going into the city in the temple, escaping, going back. And Rip sends his monks out to find the Beastmaster. And one of the monks has this ring, this cool ring with an eyeball in it, that he uses to so that, like, Riptorn can see whatever this ring can see. And one of the monks has it, and the monks try and kill the Beastmaster. There's a bit of a ruck, and some other good guys show up and help the Beastmaster. Some people get eaten by tigers. We've got this guy, Seth, who's like this like really big hunkin' dude, who is, I guess, a bit of a freedom fighter. It's like, I think he's like traveling the land trying to rally people to rise up against Zed. And this little kid who turns out to be King Zed's son, another son of Zed. Because Beastmaster doesn't know who his dad is.
I don't think he even knows that his mum was a cow.
Yeah, people, you know, it was a joke that people played on him in the playground. He didn't realise they were being literal. and
he ends up teaming up with Seth and this kid whose name I think is Tar, possibly?
Yeah,
is
it Tar? Maybe. I don't know. But the thing that Dar does is that he gives the kid the eyeball ring. Like, he doesn't realize that it's like a magical spying device. So then, from then on, Max is aware of everything that they're doing. And the Seth and the kid also know Kiri.
Yeah, the slave girl, because she is the kid's cousin. Which, doesn't that mean that she's also Dar's cousin?
Oh, yeah. Uh-oh, I did that kind of passed me by. That's
they
not
don't
good.
Stare directly into that particular sun.
and then there's just some more capering. They're kind of running around. They have a fight on a boat. They go and save, like, Kiri from Riptorn's goons. Like, they're going to go and sacrifice her.
Yeah, and then there's a really good bit where they're trying to escape on the boat, and the boat's not moving fast enough because the other guards are like on the shore, and they're like, they're gonna be able to get here quickly, make the boat go faster. And then they look around, and then they notice that there's just a couple of other bad guys also on the boat with them, and so they're like, oh fuck these guys then, and they pop them in the lake, drop them off so they drown, and then the missing weight lets the boat like suddenly zoom off really quickly. Amazing. So then they've got Kiri officially in the ranks, but Seth, I've written down, does a Gandalf,
yes,
and fucks off and is like, I will return with help in the third act.
Yes. What he's like, good luck storming the castle, boys. Like they all go, yes. So then like Kiri, Dar and Little Dar go and break into the big temple. They've gone into the city. We've escaped the city. We're going back into the city. We'll go back in there and to try and free. Is it King Zed?
King Zed, baby.
You've got to go get Zed. And there's some cool shit. Like, they're walking down this hallway, and there's like a D&D sort of trap where, like, there's these grates that lift up, and there's all these, like, brainwashed death guards with, like, spiky S&M gloves in there. Like, they're trying to kill them. They had to, you know, Dar has to figure out how to disarm the trap. That's quite cool.
And then
cool.
There's some sort of special sacrifice that the baddies do to create an evil gimp who looks like something from Dark Souls. And he's just this sort of like this brainless Death Guard guy who's just like running around just going like...
Yeah, cool. Yeah. The Death Guard gets distracted and murders the kind of like the acolyte people who created him. And like I think he picks up some keys the comedy ferrets have to get some keys off of these dead guards, so they grab the keys, and then the gimpy guy, like in his like looking like terrified with glowing green eyes, sees his ferrets and is like, rawr! And then like runs after it, and like every now and then we just cut back to this guy chasing two ferrets, and it's kind of like this weird fantasy Benny Hill bit.
Yeah.
And while this is all going on, Dar and the gang are going to rescue King Zed.
Turns out he's blind, so he doesn't know. Well, I guess he wouldn't know that Dar was his son anyway, but he doesn't really know who anyone is because he's gone blind in captivity. There's a cool bit where one of the sex witches crawls up the wall and onto the ceiling. It's like a gravity room type thing. And then Dar stabs her. She is dead. And they all escape through this skull hole. It's this sort of hole in the ground that's been blocked up by a massive skull. I've got a note at this point that just says, oh no, more gimps.
Yeah, there's loads of these, loads of the death gimps chasing them down.
One of them gets bitten in the balls by a ferret.
Yes, that's it. They're trying to like get this car out of the city, and the gate, like the portcullis, is down. And the ferrets go to try and release it, and then they get like this guard nearly kills one of the ferrets, so the other ferret bites the dude in the dick.
Yeah.
So, a lot of fun.
Teen ferret.
So,
it's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. Fun for all the family. And then after, you'd think that that blind dad would be quite thankful for being rescued by Dar. Is he shit? He's like, you're a freak, can talk to animals. I don't need you. I don't need anyone. I was just about to escape from that fortress with no eyes. You see if I couldn't have done it. I could have done it. Get out of here, you slag. And it's like, oh, okay. Right, Dick. And they've met up with Seth now, who has rallied some troops, and they're going to go in for the final push against Rip Torn.
But Rip Torn has spied all of this planning through the eyeball ring that the kid still has, so he knows what they're planning. At this point, Seth figures out what's going on with the ring, and he blinds it. He like stabs it in the eye, and it's really cool and bloody and gnarly. Good bit.
Yes. That's very cool. And after this, Seth is like, Rip Torn knows what's going to happen, Blind King. We shouldn't go in there. And like Blind King is like, we will go in there. And Seth is like, we are doomed. Fade to black. And then in the time of that fade to black, the King, Seth, all the good guys, all of Dar's mates, all have been captured by Rip Torn.
Yes, and they don't show it happening.
It all happens off screen. And I was like, I've just written like, WTF, that's whack storytelling. That is not...
I think it then turns out that this was Dar and the gang playing a trap or tricking them, because the guards that have captured them turn out to be their mates in disguise.
Right.
So there's this bit where the guards throw off their hoods and it's like, aha, it's me, Dar's friend. I guess.
Yeah.
He wasn't really captured.
It's...
Ha-ha! And then they start fighting. Fuck. I've just written, Dar fucks the monks up.
Yes, yeah, there's a lot of fighting.
Fuck up the monk.
On top of the Aztec temple kind of thing, Rip Torn stabs Blind Dad.
Then Dar stabs Rip Torn in return.
Yeah. Kiri nearly gets sacrificed. Does Blind Dad realise that Dar is his son?
Yeah, absolutely. He does, and he goes, oh, that's all right. That's nice, I suppose. Then Dar kills a witch who turns into a dove. Rip Torn comes back to life, but then a ferret sacrifices itself to push him into the fire. And I was convinced. I was like, that ferret's going to crawl out of that lava pit any minute now. No. Ferret's dead.
Ferret's dead. The ferret is like the Terminator at the end of Terminator 2. It falls into the fire, giving a big thumbs up as it goes down to its fiery death. And then, like, you're like, okay, Rip Torn's dead. Cool, we've taken back the village. But then Rip Torn's army with, like, the Batwing mask guy who had killed Dar's village, they all come back. They were like, oh, we were out of the shops for quite a long time. I hope nothing bad's happened while we were... Oh, no, Rip Torn's dead.
There's an amazing bit here where Dar is, like, looking out at the advancing horde and he's like, we will fight. And then he reaches for his one surviving ferret, picks it up, and uses it like a towel to wipe the sweat from his face.
So fucking weird.
Bearing in mind that the other ferret just died, like sacrificed itself to save you. Like, be a bit more respectful of your pets.
Well, I don't know. Now they're not a set. They've decreased in value, I guess. and so, yeah, then they kind of like, right, we've got a quick time. We've got a home alone, the city. And the city is surrounded by this big... moat of tar, so they cover it to make it look like there is no tar there, like it's all covered, so it's like a trap. It's like, haha, they'll ride over this and they'll fall in the tar, which is great. And I've just realized, like, but that was Rip Torn's army. They've obviously been there before. Well, they're like, oh man, you guys notice that they are filled in the tar moat.
But yeah, this is great. We don't have to go single file over the bridge. Come on, lads, everybody in. Oh no, there's Tar still here.
My hubris.
So there's this very fucking cool explosion, fire filled fight where all this like horde of like soldiers on horseback, they will fall in the Tar moat. The Tar moat. All the good guys that we have know, like you've got like little Dar, Seth, Kiri, they all run out to try and like stick a torch in the Tar and blow up all these guys, but they all keep on getting shot and like wounded. And then Dar goes and they finally blow up this thing. And like loads of these, like these dudes were on fire. And I was like, did they just blow up a load of horses in real life to make this thing? Cause it is a, it's a huge explosion. And it's kind of weird now. So like on the outside of the city wall, you've got all of our main characters. And then supposedly all the army and all the other villagers are just inside watching, doing absolutely nothing with no projectiles or weapons. No one tries to help these guys. They're completely outnumbered. But we get, you know, some cool, you know, fantasy sword fighting with all this fire and smoke. It's like it's real final boss kind of stuff. But they're kind of outgunned.
Yeah, they end up completely surrounded by the Junts, or the Juns, I think they're called. And there's this moment where they look at each other and they're like, it almost worked. It almost worked. But then, who comes back to save the day? But Dar's Hawk, who flew off to go and get the Winged Devourers, those cool corrosive-ass skin cloak folk who like worship his bird. They're like, we're here and we're gonna fuck everybody up, and they sort of appear and then like envelop people in their cloaks from behind and dissolve them. It is baller.
Yeah, that's it. There's a bit where Dar, I think, exchanges a really meaningful look with one of these Winged Devourers, and I'm just like, and I've written a note, was one of those his dad? Like, you know, like it's kind of like implying that there's some greater connection there, but who knows what that is, because there's,
well, he is the Beastmaster, so maybe he's gonna shag that Winged Devourer. I don't know,
like it's this weird thing. It's like, that was a cool ending, but like Dar basically won because he had a brave ferret and also had a bird.
Yeah,
like the, you know, like it's not like his own cunning and guile won the day. It was like a case of like, these guys like me because I have a pet, and so, you know, like it's quite weird.
it's something to do with he has to show that like little medallion that they gave him.
Yeah,
to be like, ah, yes, okay.
They gave him a coupon. It's like, you know, redeem this for one Deus Ex Machina.
And then we get this one little coda bit where it turns out that Seth is now king, but he's like, it should be you, Dar. It should be you.
Seth isn't king. It's Little Dar.
Oh, Dar is king.
And,
sorry.
And Seth kind of like tweaks like, oh, you're the king's older son. And he's like, don't fancy it, mate.
Yeah.
I'm off.
And then we cut off for like one last little bit of music video where him and Kiri are on top of a mountain. They've got all their animals there. And then it turns out that the ferret, the one surviving ferret, has given birth to little ferret babies.
Yay!
And the ferret's like, oh, I've got a new husband now. Meet your stepdad, kids. And it's the black tiger. And there's this weird little bit where the ferret kisses the panther, the black tiger.
Yeah, man, they got through so many baby ferrets trying to get that shot.
Yeah. And that's the movie. Credits roll. I pick my jaw up off the floor.
Yeah, it's... it's a bit of a ride. Like, I guess...
Yeah. Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it. It's a bit too long, like... And it's, you know, like, I feel like some of the pacing is a bit slow, and like, you know, like the bits where you need the dialogue to carry it, they don't really, because the dialogue isn't great and the actual acting isn't great. But there's a lot of love, all the design and like the imagery and stuff. And like, you know, there's some cool, inventive Don Coscarelli kind of weirdness in there.
I want to see a 80-minute cut of this film.
Yeah.
But in a universe where they didn't even bother to film the other stuff, and they took all of that money they spent on the other stuff and just reinvested it in the good stuff.
Yes. Yeah. yeah, for me, it's like a bit like, yeah, like I've seen like the Conan films and it feels very similar. It's like, I feel like there's some cool bits in it, but like, it's not much of a story to kind of hang it. You know, it's a very kind of like generic kind of story. And the story isn't really what keeps you engaged. It's like all the cool kind of like set PC weirdness. But it was a lot of fun, a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's hella weird. It's a lot of fun. I'm really excited to see where this franchise goes next.
Absolutely. Well, it's going to like 1980s LA, I think, which is the obvious place for this shit to go.
Yeah, that is so baffling. So he's just going to be, I'm guessing, just cruising down the Sunset Strip with his tiger and his ferrets.
Yeah, basically. I think so. Yeah, so the next one is Beastmaster 2 Through the Portal of Time. Yeah, and by all accounts, like, some of this film is set in our world, which makes it just seem like it's just going to just become like a wacky screwball comedy or something.
Well, because that's like that's a theme that fantasy returns to surprisingly often, because isn't that also the plot of the Masters of the Universe movie?
Yes, yeah, that does happen in the Masters of the Universe movie. They're kind of like, we don't have the budget to create a whole fantasy world. We're going to set it in New Jersey or something.
Yeah, which is just so odd, because
that's not what you go to see this shit for. Exactly. I mean, I think this film, in terms of what you would want to see this kind of movie for, it gives you the stuff that you want to see this kind of movie for. So yeah, like out of like, you know, the stuff we've watched on the podcast, like this is, I think, you know, rates pretty highly for me on the like, oh yeah, give it a watch-o-meter.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, if somebody put a gun to my head right now and said, listen, mate, you can either watch Jaws or you can watch The Beastmaster. I'm watching The Beastmaster.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm sorry. I know that Jaws is like a good film on paper. Beastmaster is more what I need.
Absolutely.
Now, ideally, mash them up. Let's see a scenario where the Beastmaster gets Jaws on side.
Or he goes up against the Sharkmaster. That would be cool. You know, like if you had like a rival Beastmaster or something like that. Like, yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, this is where we would say like, so what do we want to see from the next film? It's like just him in a sports car, right?
Yeah.
Or like, you know, like him with putting sunglasses on, or like something like that, or like, you know, drinking like a, you know, like a big Slurpee cup or something like that. And you know, some bits where like some like cool punks with a boombox playing like, you know, like old school hip hop or something, kind of like, hey, who are you, man? And he's kind of like, I'm Dar, and then he joins a band.
He's gonna go to like Muscle Beach or something, and there'll be some bit where he's really good at weightlifting.
Yeah, all that.
Even though the plot has never established that he's like particularly strong, like he doesn't really seem to have any qualities other than that he can talk to animals and get animals to do, like, he, if you take away the fact that he can talk to animals, he is just a normal bloke. He's not particularly clever, he's not particularly strong,
he's pretty buff.
He's buff-ish.
Like if you stand this next to Conan, he's like half the size of like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like, so he's not like a big barbarian. He's a pretty, you know, he's a guy who works out, you know, he eats a lot of like boiled chicken or whatever, like, you know, very lean protein. But like, yeah, he's not like a monster. So, you know, I'm really excited about seeing that film.
Yeah. Bring it on. Now, listeners, I hope you have enjoyed this first foray into this batshit franchise. If you've seen Beastmaster and you've got your own thoughts, then by all means, please drop us a line. We're, you know, even though we've been a bit quiet recently, we're very much still listening to what you might be tweeting at us on Twitter at Bitter End Pod, or even on Facebook at Bitter End Pod. Tom, do you have anything to add?
Why would you dye a tiger black?
I don't know. Why would you dye a tiger black, Fozzie Bear? Caw-caw!
Caw-caw.